Hello again, and welcome to In the Studio. Redbeard here with the stories behind history's greatest rock album. Today, In the Studio, the conclusion of the final album of the Jimi Hendrix Experience, Electric Ladyland, on its 35th anniversary.
We were on the road, and I do recall there were riots going on in Detroit, and we go just to get from the hotel to the car, to the limo. You go through the revolving doors, and it was like, you know, be careful, there's a bit of sniper fire. But the worst was no doubt when Martin Luther King was assassinated. I believe that night we were playing in Newark, New Jersey. We were based in New York, so we drove over, and the riots were, you know, just taking really, really hold. I mean, you could see burning buildings. And as we're driving to the gig wasn't cancelled. Two shows booked for that night. And there were tanks on the corners of the streets. Hi, this is Mitch Mitchell of the Jimi Hendrix Experience in the studio for the making of Electric Ladyland.
Last week in the studio, we discovered that Jimi Hendrix had returned to his home, the United States, from London in the spring of 1968, having electrified the rock and roll world with two smash albums in only 15 months. Hendrix was recording his third album, Electric Ladyland, in New York City with his English trio, the Jimi Hendrix Experience, made up of guitar player-turned-bassist Noel Redding and drummer Mitch Mitchell. And it was all being recorded and produced by veteran Englishman Chaz Chandler, who had given up pop stardom in The Animals. When Chaz discovered Jimi Hendrix struggling in New York's Greenwich Village a scant 2 years earlier, took him to London, wagered everything, mentored Hendrix through the revolutionary debut album Are You Experienced, and then Axis Bold as Love, only to find himself back in the vastness of America with Jimmy as a star about to go into supernova. And midway through recording the album Electric Ladyland, Chaz Chandler was growing increasingly frustrated thousands of miles from his power base of London. Here's Hendrix biographer John McDermott.
It's clear, I mean, that the two main issues that, you know, arose during the making of Electric Ladyland were Jimmy's desire to become a little more ambitious in his approach towards the production of the album, and I think that directly clashed with Chaz. And I also think, too, that there was a certain degree of Hendrix returning to the United States as a success for the first time. I mean, when he had left in 1966, he was completely broke, was struggling, was trying to launch a band in Greenwich Village, Jimmy James and the Blue Flames. You know, he was not Jimi Hendrix or the Jimi Hendrix Experience when Chaz Chandler found him. I mean, he was really a hungry, struggling musician trying to make a go of it with no success to show for. And I think when he came back in March of 68, it was an opportunity to reconnect with old friends, to have some fun. And I think that clashed initially with Chaz because, you know, Chaz really felt the urge to strike while the iron was hot and that America was there for the taking. And I think Jimmy wanted a little time to, I guess, enjoy his success to a degree. And so I think Chaz in London was more than just a record producer. He was like a father. He was the person who was involved with Jimmy on a very intense, intimate way, looking after him as a co-manager, really involved in almost every facet of making the Jimi Hendrix Experience a success in England and in Europe. In America, you know, it was obviously a huge landscape where there was great interest in what he was doing, kind of burgeoning from colleges to the San Francisco and the Fillmore and the New York and the Fillmore. And I think it was difficult for Chaz to keep a handle on all the things that were happening.
Must be some kind of way out of here, say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth.
On the 1968 third Jimi Hendrix Experience album, there appeared a cover of the obscure Bob Dylan song that Hendrix so completely made his own, that still, 35 years later, we have to constantly remind ourselves that the singer is not the author. Here's experienced drummer Mitch Mitchell.
Jimmy, for a chap that, as I found out, hadn't had that much schooling, really, just came out with his profound lyrics, which showed a depth of character that was completely unexpected to me. You know, I mean, I'm thinking back things like, you know, Manic Depression. He really liked Bob Dylan as a lyricist. And in that way, in the very early formative period of the band, when you are finding out each other's tastes, musical and otherwise, I'd be sort of attempting to turn him on, or, you know, say, playing maybe a bit of John Coltrane or Roland Kirk or Miles Davis or, you know, whatever. And at the same token, he'd be showing me things, you know, some Dylan. You know, of course, I was aware of Bob Dylan's work for many, many years, but I'd never played in a situation using it, doing any Dylan stuff. I never paid attention to the lyrics either, you know. And so it enlightened me a lot. That's the wonderful thing with Jimmy and, well, the relationship I was fortunate enough to have with him. it's very rare in a musician's life that you can play with some wonderful, wonderful schooled players, wonderful players, period. They can be your best friends, but they might not be the best players. But when you find someone that is prepared to take a chance on anything, it's a risk. You know, that's how new music is formed, by making mistakes a lot of times. Because, you know, this wasn't written down as such. It was just throwing ideas back and forth, you know. And Jimmy was never scared of trying something in a new direction. And that really appealed to me.
Last week, in part one, we learned that frustrations in the studio had escalated to the point where producer and co-manager Chaz Chandler had walked out midway through recording the album Electric Ladyland, and he had returned to England. It turns out that experienced bass player Noel Redding agreed with Chandler, according to drummer Mitch Mitchell.
The amount of time we spent in the studio on a track, that really used to grate with Chaz. And with Noel, it was like, you know, in, get it done, get it in and out, in and out. Whereas with Jimmy and possibly myself, it could go take after take after take after take. And often you would come back and you find out Chaz was right. Like a case being, early days, we crept into the studio we had to have a single out, and we went and we just did a demo of The Wind Cries Mary, played it a couple of times, put it down on tape. That was it. When I went out on the road, came back the next week to record it properly. and we stuck with the demo, you know, because it just felt better. So often that's where it is good to hear, have another pair of ears to say, come on, you're wasting time. The first one, it's fresh. And Chaz was being pushed in a direction that he wasn't at all happy with. He just recently married, and I think he'd had enough of the games, quite honestly, and the lunacy. It was lunacy at that point. It was. I mean, you know, it was getting burnout time because the band. We were doing two shows a night. When I look at the itinerary, we did 49 cities in 52 days, two shows a night. And, you didn't see anything apart from an early morning flight, the same hotel room only 1,000 miles away, the stage. And that's all you had to look forward to. That was the release of just going and getting on stage and doing that and doing the concerts. If that was bad, and it often, you know, the mix would be fouled up, or the sound quality, the sound balance would be absolute dire. Jimmy would throw a wobbly, people would say, oh, that was a great gig tonight, but, you know, only you know it wasn't, not from where we were.
Jimi Hendrix biographer John McDermott.
So in that context, it becomes a philosophical problem between Hendrix and Redding arises, in that Noel felt that the Chandler approach was far more productive, it was quicker, and the results were proven. I think Jimmy felt that there had reached a point in his mind where if Noel didn't want to stay or didn't want to play the bass in the particular way he wanted, he was going to do it himself. And I think that certainly caused some problems between Jimmy and Noel. I think one of the other issues, too, that has to be factored in is that, you know, the Experience were not a group of lifelong friends that, you know, got together in school and played in their garage and hit the road together. They were really, you know, drafted in at an audition in 1966 and had gelled and become a tremendous band. But at the end of the day, you know, Hendrix was really feeling the opportunity had come for him to put forward the music he wanted to make. And if Noel wasn't going to be supportive of that, well, certainly he was still in the band, but the studio was a situation viewed quite differently than the stage for Jimmy. And you were either going to kind of get on board or you'd have to get out of the way. And I think ultimately that tension continued to grow throughout the record. And I honestly don't think it ever really repaired itself. I think that there were personality issues between Jimmy and Noel that grew over time to the point where the following year Noel left the band. But I think he really just saw Electric Ladyland as his chance to take advantage of this leap in technology, this great group of songs that he had pulled together, a supportive network and people like Eddie Kramer and Gary Kellgren. This was his chance, and he seized it. And those that didn't quite follow the path, you know, he dealt with in his kind of, you know, his own way.
The song Burning of the Midnight Lamp, a psychedelic relic that was a key recording for the future life of Jimi Hendrix and the careers of so many that radiated off of that central hub. Up next, Mitch Mitchell is replaced in the studio by a bass player with the initials J.H. While a king is assassinated in Memphis, a prince is assassinated on his way to the presidency, and America burns during the long hot summer of 68. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio for the 35th anniversary of Electric Ladyland, Part 2, by the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
The Goodyear Stockroom Clearance Tire Sale is going on right now. Our stockroom just can't hold any more tires, so we're clearing out a wide selection of popular Goodyear passenger, performance, and light truck tires. Plus, when you buy four selected Goodyear tires, you'll get up to a $50 cash card. But hurry, the Goodyear Stockroom Clearance Tire Sale and $50 cash card offer both end January 17th. Don't let these great deals pass you by. For complete details, call 1-800-GOODYEAR or visit any participating Goodyear retailer.
Ow! Honey, every time you cough, you kick me. I'm falling out of bed.
That four-hour cough medicine you bought wore off. Wish I had NyQuil cough. It's made to last all night. I could be sleeping now. Sorry, Binky. I didn't mean to kick you.
NyQuil cough. That stops your coughing, 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 so you can sleep through the night. Cough medicine. Use as directed. from the makers of NyQuil.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
When I wear black, even a little dandruff shows, and my old dandruff shampoo just wasn't doing enough. I still had flakes, and my scalp felt dry and itchy. So I switched to Celsin Blue Moisturizing Shampoo with aloe and moisturizers.
Doctor-recommended Celsin Blue as a proven ingredient to relieve dandruff, plus it keeps hair and scalp healthy and itch-free.
If your dandruff shampoo can't handle black, do what I did. Switch to Celsin Blue Moisturizing Shampoo.
Never wear black without the blue. Celsin Blue. Use as directed.